Okay, let's unpack this. We live in a world grappling with immense challenges. Climate change, widening inequality, tests to democracy. I mean, how on earth do you even begin to measure if we're making genuine progress in navigating all of that complexity?
It's a huge question, isn't it?
Yeah, and existing ways of tracking human development often feel, well, a bit siloed, don't they?
Mm.
They might look at economic growth or health, but they don't always capture the full, messy, interconnected picture, like how people's fundamental rights are being respected alongside environmental health and, you know, effective governance.
That's exactly right. Traditional metrics, they often give us valuable pieces of information, sure, but they can struggle to show how these pieces fit together in a vast, dynamic system.
Yeah, right.
They might show you the score, maybe, but not necessarily how the different parts of the system are influencing each other.
And that's exactly what the source material you've shared dives into. It introduces a new way of looking at this, something called the Global Index of Human Rights and Sustainable Development, or IGDHDS.
IGDHDS.
Yeah. It's developed by Carlos Mettle, and the big idea, it seems, is to explicitly fuse those two critical dimensions, human rights and sustainable development, into a single, hopefully more useful, metric.
And what's particularly interesting, I think, is how the material places this index within a history of global efforts to measure progress. It traces a line from the Universal Declaration of Human Rights back in 1948.
Okay.
Through the Human Development Index, the HDI, in 1990, the Millennium Development Goals, MDGs, in 2000, the SDGs, in 2015.
Right, the Sustainable Development Goals.
Exactly.
Mm.
Leading up to this proposed IGDHDS in 2025, it's presented as an evolution, you know, a next step driven by the need for a more integrated perspective.
So our mission for this deep dive is to really explore the material you provided and understand what this IGDHDS is, why the authors argue it's needed, how it's actually built and calculated, and, well, what its potential aims are.
Sounds good.
Let's start with that fundamental question. Why do the authors believe we need another index? There are quite a few out there already.
Well, the material is quite clear that this index is a direct response to those complex global challenges we just mentioned. You know, things like climate breakdown, persistent inequalities, the challenges faced by democratic systems.
Mm.
The core objective is really to integrate human rights and sustainable development into one measurable operational tool.
Okay, integrate. And how is this intended to be different from metrics we're already familiar with, like the HDI, for instance?
Yeah, that's a key point. A key difference highlighted is that the IGDHDS explicitly incorporates human rights indices and political stability as core components right from the start.
Oh, okay.
Unlike the HDI, which focuses mainly on health, education, and income, or other indices that might only look at governance in a general sense, this index is designed from the ground up to view human rights and political stability as fundamental pillars.
Intertwined with development and environmental care.
Exactly. Intertwined, not separate issues.
Okay, so it's specifically pulling in those human rights and stability factors as foundational. And who is this tool primarily for, according to the material? Who's meant to use it?
It seems targeted at academic environments, institutions, mm-hmm. and policymakers, essentially. People and organizations who need, well, robust tools for analysis, research, and informing decision-making at various levels.
Got it. So maybe less for a quick public headline number, more for deeper analysis.
Potentially both, but the detailed analysis seems key.
Okay, so let's look closer at those two big concepts at its heart, human rights and sustainable development. How does the material actually define them? Start with human rights.
Sure. Human rights are described as universal legal guarantees that safeguard dignity. Pretty standard start,
mm-hmm.
but it includes the familiar categories like civil and political rights, economic, social, and cultural rights. And importantly, the definition in the material also explicitly mentions collective and environmental rights.
That's interesting, adding the collective and environmental aspect explicitly. And sustainable development. That definition feels pretty established, often linked to the Brundtland Report, right?
It is, yeah. And the material uses that widely accepted definition. A process that satisfies present needs without compromising the needs of future generations.
The classic definition.
Exactly. And this is then broken down into the three sort of interconnected dimensions. Economic equity, social inclusion and justice, and environmental care.
And the IGDHDS brings these two human rights and sustainable development together.
Yes, the material strongly emphasizes an integrated approach. It sees them not as separate goals you pursue independently, but as deeply interdependent, essential for achieving true social well-being, like two sides of the same coin almost.
Complementary pillars, as they put it.
Precisely.
All right, so the index is built on these integrated ideas, But the material also talks a lot about its foundation being complexity. This sounds like it gets pretty theoretical. What does recognizing complexity actually mean for how this index is built?
Yeah, this is where it gets really interesting, I think, and maybe sets it apart. Its foundation is rooted in understanding social systems as complex adaptive systems.
Okay, complex adaptive systems. What does that mean in plain English?
Well, what it means is recognizing that societal dynamics aren't simple cause and effect lines. They're not linear. They're driven by feedback loops, and they're prone to what are called emergent phenomena.
Emergent phenomena.
Yeah, where small actions can sometimes lead to large, unpredictable outcomes. Things you wouldn't expect just by looking at the individual parts.
Right, like trying to predict traffic jams just by counting cars doesn't quite work. You need to see how they interact.
Exactly. That's a great analogy. The material argues that to measure progress in such a system, you can't just add up individual parts in isolation. You need a way to model these interactions and, crudely, potential unpredictable outcomes.
So it's not just a snapshot. It's trying to model the dynamics.
That's the ambition. This is why the IGDHDS incorporates capabilities for simulation and projection. It's trying to understand not just the current state, but potential future states that could emerge from these complex dynamics.
That makes sense. It's aiming to be more dynamic than just a static picture, which feels important for the kind of problems we're talking about. So what are the guiding principles that flow from this complex systems view?
Based on the material, there are four key principles guiding its design. First, the interdependence of dimensions. You absolutely have to look at everything together.
Okay.
Second, multifactorial measurement. You need to capture many different types of data, not just one or two things.
Right.
Third, dynamic real-time adaptability. Ideally, the index should be able to track changes as they happen, or at least be updated frequently and easily.
Mm-hmm.
And fourth, acknowledging nonlinearity and emergent effects. These unpredictable dynamics have to be explicitly built into the modeling somehow.
Okay, that gives us the big picture conceptual framework. Really ambitious. Now, let's get concrete. What are the actual building blocks, the variables that make up the IGDHDS, and how is it calculated?
Okay, so the material identifies six fundamental thematic blocks or variables. Think of these as the main pillars, the index measures.
These pillars, got it.
Yeah. First is VGF. That's Valores Éticos y Gobernanza, or Ethical Values and Governance.
Yeah.
This looks at things like institutional trust, perception of equity, that sort of thing.
Okay, trust and equity, important.
Then GBDDH, Estado de los Derechos Humanos, the State of Human Rights. This measures things like actual violations, access to justice.
Practical reality of rights.
Exactly. Third, LESP, Legislación Progresista, or Progressive Legislation. This considers the existence and, crucially, the effective application of relevant labor and social laws.
So not just laws on the books, but if they actually work.
That seems to be the focus.
Yeah.
Then ESPM, Estabilidad Política, Political Stability.
Hmm.
This assesses things like the level of internal conflict, government effectiveness.
Makes sense. Hard to have rights or development without some stability.
Right. Fifth is CCO, Capacidad Organizativa. Organizational capacity. This measures bureaucratic efficiency, how well different levels of government or institutions coordinate. You know, can the system actually deliver?
Okay, the machinery of state.
And finally, DESC, Derechos Socioeconómicos y Culturales, Economic, Social, and Cultural Rights. This covers things like access to healthcare, education, social protection, the basics of well-being.
Wow, that does seem to cover a very wide range of crucial factors. How on earth are these all combined into the final index score?
Well, first, the material outlines some foundational rules, or modeling axioms, as they call them. These include inclusion, making sure no dimension is left out.
Okay.
Normalization, scaling everything to a comparable range, 0 to 10, so you can actually average them.
Standard practice for indices.
Right, and functional simplicity and analytical transparency. They want it to be understandable.
And the calculation itself. Given all this talk of complexity, nonlinearity, is it some incredibly complicated weighted formula?
Well, this was fascinating, maybe a bit surprising. The material states the final IGDHDS score is calculated as a simple average of those six blocks.
A simple average? Seriously?
Yep. IGDHDS plus GVDDH plus ELESP plus ESPM plus CCO plus DESC6. And each block score is itself just the average of the variables measured within it.
Huh. A simple average. That feels almost counterintuitive after discussing complex systems and nonlinearity. Why would they choose something so straightforward for the final score?
It's a deliberate choice. The material provides a very clear justification for this. The simple average is chosen specifically to prioritize clarity and public understanding.
Okay.
Also to ensure replicability so others can check the results. And, very pointedly, to avoid introducing subjective biases that can creep in with complex weighting schemes.
Ah, so they're saying weighting itself can be a source of bias or hide assumptions.
Exactly. They seem to have focused the complexity modeling part on understanding the interactions and dynamics within and between the blocks. That's where the simulation and projection comes in. But they kept the final aggregate score transparent and easy to grasp.
Okay, that's a critical distinction. The underlying system is viewed as complex. The analysis can be complex. But the reporting of the main score is designed for transparency and accessibility. That makes more sense.
Mm-hmm. And the material also has a slide directly comparing it to other indices.
Right. What are the main differences highlighted there?
Well, it reiterates the point about being multidimensional and integrated versus indices that might be unidimensional or just focus on two factors.
Like only economics or only environment.
Precisely. It stresses the dynamic nature, including those simulations and projections, versus being just a static snapshot in time. It highlights the foundation in complex adaptive systems logic versus simpler linear approaches. And it also mentions the potential for application at different scales, micro, like a city or region, and macro, like a whole country, suggesting a flexibility that might not always be present in other global indices.
Okay, we've covered the mechanics, the how, but the material also goes surprisingly deep into the philosophy and ontology behind the index. This feels pretty unique for what's essentially a measurement tool. What's the point of bringing philosophy into it?
Well, I think this raises a crucial point about what measurement really means, especially in the social realm, right?
Hmm.
The material explicitly describes designing this index as a profoundly philosophical action.
A philosophical action. Wow.
Yeah, it goes beyond just the technical number crunching to consider fundamental questions.
Yeah.
What is considered real, what can we actually know about it, and what values are inevitably embedded in the measurement itself.
So it's not just pretending to be a neutral way to count things, it's acknowledging it's making a statement about the world.
Exactly. Yeah. It consciously integrates ideas from complex ontology, which is about the nature of social reality, how it is.
Mm-hmm.
Critical epistemology, which is about how we can know that reality, and importantly, the limits of that knowledge.
Yeah.
And ethics of knowledge, how that knowledge should be used, particularly, they argue, for promoting social change.
Okay, this is getting deep. How does that philosophical view shape how the index actually sees social systems?
It views social systems as fundamentally open and dynamic. They're constantly in perpetual movement, as the material quotes Edgar Morin. Always interacting, exchanging, evolving.
So reality isn't static.
Not at all. This is key to the complexity view.
Yeah.
Social reality isn't some fixed thing you can just observe perfectly from the outside. It's constantly being made and remade.
And what about that idea mentioned structured totality? What does that mean?
That relates to the idea that within these dynamic systems, the elements like economic rights or political stability gain their real meaning from how they relate to everything else, not in isolation.
Context is everything.
Precisely.
Yeah.
It's a dynamic, interconnected structure. So for instance, economic rights aren't just an economic number. They're understood within their broader social, political, environmental context.
This makes me think about that old debate, you know, individual agency versus systemic forces. Does the index's philosophy weigh in on the relationship between the agent and the structure?
It does, yeah. And it takes a nuanced view, referencing the sociologist Bourdieu, saying something like, structures condition action but do not determine it.
Okay, so structures influence us but don't fully control us.
Right. It means while the existing structures, laws, economic systems, political institutions, cultural norms certainly influence and constrain what people and groups can do, the philosophy behind the index also acknowledges that people and collectives have agency. They can act, they can push back, they can transform that reality.
And how does that connect back to the idea of emergent structures we discussed earlier, with the complexity?
Well, because social reality is dynamic. And because agents interact within and react to structures, new patterns and even new structures can emerge from those continuous interactions.
Ah, the system evolves.
Exactly. This is where small changes or shifts in agency can potentially lead to significant reorganizations, those bifurcations mentioned in the material. The index's modeling capabilities are intended, in part, to explore these potential emergent paths.
Interesting.
And a core idea underpinning all this is that social reality is constructed. It's not just a pre-existing, objective thing out there waiting to be measured perfectly.
We build it through interaction.
In a sense, yes. The index is designed to try and capture this dynamic, interdependent reality. And it explicitly integrates social actors as agents who are actively shaping that reality.
So the index is measuring a reality that we, as individuals and societies, are actively constructing. That's quite a concept.
It is. And this leads directly to the critical epistemology aspect they mentioned. It moves away from a simple, maybe naive empiricism. You know, the idea that data just shows you reality exactly as it is, objectively.
Right, like data speaks for itself.
Which it rarely does, especially in social science. It recognizes the limitations of social knowledge. And crucially, it argues that the whole purpose of creating this knowledge, of building this index, is that it should be oriented towards positive social change.
Yeah.
It's knowledge for action.
And how does that affect the idea of objectivity? The material mentions going beyond absolute objectivity. What's that about? Is it saying objectivity isn't possible or desirable?
Not quite that it isn't desirable, perhaps, but that absolute objectivity might be an illusion in this context. This point is rooted in that idea of constructed reality and critical epistemology. Social knowledge isn't seen as a neutral, unbiased reflection of a fixed world.
Mm-mm.
They reference Kant, you know, the idea that we don't see the world as it is, but as we are. Our perspective shapes what we see. So the IGDHTS is framed not as some neutral, objective truth teller, but as a strategic representation. It's a tool deliberately built with a specific perspective and a declared set of priorities. Human rights, sustainability, equity.
So it's transparent about its own values.
Exactly. It's transparent about the values embedded in its very design, rather than pretending they aren't there.
That's a really deep way to think about an index, not just a spreadsheet or score, but a tool built with a specific philosophical stance and, frankly, an ethical purpose.
It certainly positions it differently from purely technical metrics.
So how does all this translate into actually putting the index to use in practice? The material includes a manual with an operational sequence, right? A step-by-step.
Yes. It outlines a 7-step process for applying the IGDHTS.
Okay, let's walk through it.
Step 1, define the area. Decide if you're analyzing a country, a region, a city, whatever the unit is.
Makes sense. Scope it out.
Step 2, data collection. Gather the data needed for those 6 thematic blocks we talked about. The material suggests this could be provided by an institution or might involve automated searches.
Okay, get the raw number.
Step 3, calculation. Compute the score using that simple average formula we discussed, VGF plus GVDDH plus 6.
Straightforward bit.
Step 4, initial interpretation. This is key. Analyze what factors contribute most to the score, and the material provides classification ranges to help interpret the result. Critical is 0 to 2.9, high risk is 3.0 to 5.9, moderate is 6.0 to 7.9, and adequate is 8.0 to 10.0.
So giving context to the number, critical, high risk.
Okay. Step 5, optional advanced options. This is where the complexity analysis comes back in. For deeper analysis, you can use techniques like simulation, fuzzy logic, Bayesian networks, or Monte Carlo methods.
Right, the what-if scenarios and dynamic modeling.
Exactly. Step 6, symbolic inferential network modeling. This step sounds complex, but it allows for mapping the potential cause and effect pathways between the different blocks and variables, visualizing the interconnections.
Seeing how, say, political stability might influence rights?
Precisely that kind of relationship.
Yeah.
And finally, step 7, generate report. Produce a final academic report with suggested sections for the intro, methodology results, interpretation recommendations, and references. Standard academic output.
Okay, let's just touch on those advanced options and the network modeling again briefly. If the final score is just a simple average, what are these more complex techniques really for? Why bother with them?
Ah, that's key. The simple average gives you the overall score, the headline, and shows how each main block contributed. But those advanced options in the network modeling, they're for understanding the how and the why behind that score, and for exploring potential futures.
Okay.
Simulation lets you run what-if scenarios. What happens if a certain policy changes, or a particular human right violation increases or decreases? Fuzzy logic can help integrate qualitative data, or handle uncertainty better than crisp numbers. Bayesian networks and Monte Carlo are about modeling probabilities and outcomes in these complex interconnected systems.
Right.
And the symbolic inferential network specifically aims to visualize and analyze those potential causal links, helping you see not just what the scores are, but how changes in, say, VGF, ethical values and governance, might impact DSC, socioeconomic rights, or how ESPM, political stability, affects GVDDH, state of human rights. They add layers of dynamic analysis and predictive insight, beyond the basic score.
Okay, that makes perfect sense now. The simple average is the transparent headline score, but the advanced methods are where you do the really deep diagnostic and maybe even predictive work. So how might someone listening actually see this kind of index applied in the real world? What's the practical application?
Well, based on the material, tools like the IGDHDS could be used to directly inform policy development, you know, identifying weak spots. They could provide a rigorous way to track whether things are actually getting better or worse over time across these integrated dimensions.
Monitoring progress or regress.
Exactly. And potentially, it could even act as an early warning system for emerging crises related to human rights or sustainability issues if the dynamic modeling picks up worrying trends.
Interesting.
The material specifically mentions integrating it into policy dashboards and early warning systems as concrete future steps they envision.
Okay. Speaking of the future, what are the stated next steps for the IGDHDS itself, according to the material? Where does it go from here?
The plans mentioned include conducting pilot tests in various national contexts.
Right.
You know, testing it out in the real world to refine the index.
See how it performs.
Right. And undergoing iterative calibration based on feedback from stakeholders, academics, policymakers, maybe NGOs. And then ultimately, the goal is integrating it into practical policy tools.
So wrapping this deep dive up, the IGDHDS, based on the material you shared, is clearly an ambitious and, well, innovative effort to create a more holistic way of measuring human progress. That much is clear.
Definitely seems that way.
It explicitly links human rights and sustainable development, which feels crucial. It grounds itself in this really interesting understanding of complex, dynamic systems.
The complexity angle is central.
And it uses a transparent calculation for the main score while incorporating these advanced modeling techniques for deeper insights. And it even comes with this surprisingly deep philosophical grounding about the nature of reality and knowledge itself.
Yeah, it really offers a compelling vision for moving beyond fragmented metrics, trying to embrace the interconnected reality of the global challenges we all face.
So here's a final thought for you, the listener. Given this approach, thinking about social reality as complex, dynamic, and where human rights and sustainability are fundamentally intertwined and measurable together, how does understanding that change how you think about measuring progress, whether it's in your own community, your country, or globally? And maybe more importantly, how might taking this kind of integrated, complexity-aware view affect the way we approach finding solutions to those complex problems? It definitely gives you something to ponder.